stuff.
Your mother's sister.
Yes.
I see. Yes.
Yes.
And her name?
She was Walker. She was May Carlo Walker. They all had sort of double names and things like that. And they were a family, naturally Scotch, but migrated to Liverpool. And connected with the wine and spirits and beer trade, but not Johnny Walkers.
I see.
We've often suffered from the fact that people think we were Johnny Walkers, just enrolling in money and so forth. They were not that family, but they were very much connected with that business, including my grandfather, May Walker's father, who retired to Llandudno. In fact, when he came there, there hardly was a Llandudno, because his was only the second house on the promenade. And after that, the Mostyn estate, which owned the whole of Llandudno, had it very beautifully planned. That's why Llandudno looks more like Brighton or somewhere, whereas most of the North Wales resorts are just a hodgepodge, you see.
So her father was sort of, you'd say, well-to-do?
He was well-to-do. Oh, yes, he was well-to-do. And he was an old chap when I knew him, and retired. And his great hobby was gardening, flowers. I don't think he gardened himself, but he bought a piece of the great orm and made what are now the town gardens, which are called Humphrey Gardens, and they were very, very beautiful, and they still are. Dan bought them after his death. So May grew up first in Liverpool, West Derby, I think. I know when she came home from Canada, where she finally lived, on her last visit, she did go to West Derby to look at the house where she was and where she played in the garden and so forth, she told me, and then she came and stayed with me. And she was by then quite a Canadian, but she travelled all over the world. She never married. She never seemed to be interested in getting married at all. She had plenty of opportunities because she was very, very beautiful.
Yes, you mentioned
she was a very handsome woman, and could have married many times over, but she never had, of course, a career, because, you see, at that time it wasn't expected that women did anything except get married. If they didn't get married, there didn't seem to be anything for them at all. And her father asked her, would she like to travel? And she said yes. And when I was quite a small child, I remember getting picture postcards from Japan from her. She went around the world, did a tour, and that gave her such a taste for it that I think she traveled all her life. Well, the only sort of raison d'etre that she ever had specially for travelling was when she went to work for the, I think it's called the Psychical Research, do you know?
No, I didn't know.
Well, whether it exists now, I don't know. But it did then. It was Psychic Research. I think it was the leading thing in England for that sort of thing. And they got hold of May Walker, and they appointed her as a sort of investigator. And she went off to all sorts of places, all sorts of parts of the world, on their instructions to investigate mediums. And then wrote long reports on them, do you see, which either...
If they were genuine.
If they were genuine. And some she found were not. And she enjoyed doing that very much. She was a terrific reader. And she read up that sort of thing. And she read up psychology. And she was in touch with a number of psychologists of the time. I don't think she ever met Freud, but she met some of the contemporaries of Freud, and used to talk about that. And all this she did of her own initiative. Her family didn't encourage her in any particular way with that. But she must have taken up the suffragettes in the very beginning. And as a terrible shock to her mother, because she thought it was too frightful to have a daughter who proved of suffragettes and so forth, you see. So I suppose May didn't say a lot about it at home. And
you said in your letter that instances of Mrs. Pankhurst suffering in prison were greeted with delight at home.
Oh, they were, yes. Oh, yes. They were considered most dreadful women. There was no sympathy for them at all. anywhere around me. I was just a child hearing it all, of course, and these dreadful women and so forth. nothing was too bad for them, I don't think, really. But May never was arrested or anything of that I know of. I'm pretty certain she wasn't. But she must have participated, probably in London, because at one time she had a flat in London, a beautiful flat, with wonderful Chinese lacquer furniture. She got quite a flair, a taste for that sort of thing. And she must, all her friends who were suffragettes, I would imagine, were probably from London and places like that, see. And she would talk about it, but I never got her to say she'd done very much, except she said the first time I ever really gave to something till it hurt was to the suffragettes. You see, she had made financial sacrifices, definitely, for it. Well, then the war came, and by that time she had fallen out with my grandmother, because my grandfather had died, and she wasn't at home at all until her brother, younger brother, was killed in the war, which brought her back into contact with her mother. And after that, I used to see her quite often in the school holidays. She would come along, and we would go and stay in places for my holidays, I suppose. And she was always, she had friends all over the world, and her correspondence was terrific. She was always writing letters, which nobody could read, because she had an appalling handwriting. But they were intensely interesting when you could get a bit out of them.
Was that about psychic research? Or?
No, not specially. About the people that she met, and the experiences she had in travelling in different places, and so forth. She would recount them all.
So did her father sort of make her an allowance or something?
She must have had an allowance, I suppose, being an unmarried daughter. He had three daughters, the other two were married. He must have given her an allowance, do you see, which he would have given probably to a married daughter. So that enabled her to be quite free to come and go wherever she wanted. She wasn't rich, but neither was she in any financial straits at all. She could do what she liked, and she certainly did.
Tell me about your grandmother. Actually, what sort of woman was she? She wasn't a Walker, of course. Walker.
No, she was a Wiley. She was very much a Scot from Galloway. W-Y-L-L-I-E or W-Y-L-I-E. There's a difference in the way you spell it. But she was from Galloway. And very Scotch, and very much a woman of her own time. She never thought of women having the vote or doing anything different to what she'd always done. And it goes back a long time, because I remember her sister saying that in their little church in Galloway somewhere, it was quite an excitement when Maggie Walker came out in a lilac crinoline on Sunday, you see, and that rather places her, you see. So that she wasn't interested in the things that May Walker was interested in at all.
Her name was Margaret, was it? Margaret
her name Walker. Was Margaret Walker, yes, Margaret Walker. And eventually May settled in Canada.
Yes, now how did that happen? Because first of all, you said she did munitions work in the First War.
She did munitions work in the First War, yes.
And was really distant from her mother, presumably partly because of the suffrage movement, perhaps.
No, I don't think that. I don't think that made that much difference. But when my grandfather died, there was a bit of a split in the family, and so we didn't see anything of her for a year or two until the war brought her back, you see. And then, I don't know what made her settle in Canada at all, but she did. She settled in Toronto, and rather changed her outlook, because she was very much a free thinker when I first knew her as a young teenager. And then she went back to the church in Canada, because I remember her writing and saying that. But what influences caused her to do that, I don't know.
Yes, because you can't ever find that out.
No,
okay,
not easy. No, no. And I really only saw her once after I was married, and she came and stayed here. And then she went up to London and met various cousins. She always kept up with the family. She was great for keeping up with the Walkers and the different cousins and so forth that she knew.
Did she get on all right with her sisters? I mean,
she I think so, yes. I don't think they were all tremendously attached, but they didn't quarrel.
And her younger brother as well? I mean,
her younger brother must have been 10 years younger than she was. They went out skiing together in Switzerland, and she was dressed in long skirts. I've got a photograph of them. You see, that's how women skied in those days. It was all quite daring, I suppose.
So she was a nice-looking woman, and an intelligent woman. I mean, what sort of education did she have?
I suppose she must have gone to a boarding school. But as far as I know, she wasn't educated abroad. Her stepsisters were in Germany, but I don't think she was ever sent abroad.
I see. She had.
She had two stepsisters. Her father married twice. My grandmother was the second wife. And
that was her mother.
Her mother, yes, was the second wife.
So she was the eldest child of the second marriage, was she?
She wasn't the eldest. She was the youngest daughter.
Yes.
There were four of them. The boy who was killed in the war was the youngest. He was 10 years younger than May.
Oh, I see. Yes. So there were four children.
There were four children. You see, and my mother and my other aunt, they were married, and May wasn't.
So May really went to London first, and then you say she did munitions work for a bit.
She did munitions work in the war. Yeah. I remember her saying it was very hard work, and it took her a while to recover from it, I think, but she did do it. And I suppose it was that sort of time when she was in touch with women who perhaps planned to do more about the suffragettes when the war was over, but there wasn't any need, because I think it was very shortly after the war they got the vote.
That's right. That's right. So when did she go to Canada, Mrs. Goodman?
Not at all. Mm. She must have been travelling about, but then I was married and out of touch and accepted. I got letters from her at Christmas and so forth, until I suppose it could be 20 years ago now, when she settled in Canada,
so
and she seemed to like it.
Definitely
after the Second War, and she became a Canadian citizen, I think.
Did she really?
Yes, she did.
Yeah. But you never knew quite why she settled.
Don't know why she chose that, but she seemed to like it. She seemed to like the social life very much, and like the Canadians. Curiously enough, she had a nephew who also settled in Canada. He's still there, but not anywhere near her. And she died there, and we had very charming letters from friends after she died. They evidently thought a lot of her, impressed by her.
She was an impressive sort of woman, was she? Not just to look at, but in other ways, do you think?
Well, she was very intellectual. She was very knowledgeable. She'd read a great deal. She'd met a great number of people. I remember she had one suitor who was a Swedish judge. And she showed me long letters from him, and he desperately wanted her to marry him. But she couldn't face, I think, going off and living in Sweden. And she didn't, you see. Didn't at all.
What about politics? And was she on the left or on the right?
Her father was a very strong liberal. He supported Lloyd George, although he was a Scot, nothing to do with Wales, but he lived in Wales. Oh, he supported Lloyd George and all that sort of thing in Parliament. It was a great liberal. I remember he had all the local magazines, Truth and all those sort of things, always going. And I think she must have followed him largely, because she did take an interest in politics. She did read about politics. She would talk about them to me and what she thought of them. Another thing that she was interested in was the stock exchange. She managed her own financial affairs, although my grandfather had thought it prudent to get his daughters tied up with the public trustee. I don't know whether the public trustee still exists in that way now. No, but it did then, you see. And he thought, I suppose he had an old-fashioned idea of women, thought they could never possibly handle their own affairs. So they were all, their money was all entrusted to the public trustee. And May seemed to accept that and was constantly going to the public trustee in London and requested them to do this and that with her money, and she would invest in stocks and shares, and she seemed to do quite all right. She seemed to know how to do it, and she would talk about that to me. In fact, I think the first investment I ever made was inspired by her talking about the Canadian Pacific, and she had money in that, and I promptly put some money into that. I've still got it, you see, because she... I think she wasn't the only one of the family, the women in the family, who rather realized that they, their faculties were not being properly used, you see.
Did she talk about not being properly stretched? I mean, did she feel resentment?
No, I don't think she did, because she got the satisfaction of traveling about and meeting with people. Her cousin, who lived also in Llandudno and unfortunately died only a few years ago, could have told an awful lot about May. She also said that she so regretted that she hadn't been able to take part in her family's own business, because she would have so liked it, but you see, it wasn't considered that a woman would be any good or anything about it. And she never got an opportunity to use her flares for organization until the Second World War.
Yes, because the wars do open up a lot.
They open up a lot, you see. And this niece of May's, a cousin of my own, Elsie Tolson, she immediately ran a big canteen for the soldiers in Llandudno and organized all sorts of things. It was in the seventh heaven, because gave her the opportunity. It wasn't done to go into business. And so she never had the doubt. She would love to have gone into business.
So May Walker, you think, might have also liked
it? I'm sure May Walker could have certainly done it and probably been very good at it.
Yes, but there just wasn't.
There wasn't the chance to do it.
Yes.
There was nothing left to her but just to travel about.
Yes.
Which she did.
What about causes? I mean, did she... Was the woman's suffrage movement the only cause, apart from...
Yes, as far as I know, I don't think she ever took any very active part in any other cause than the suffragette movement and the psychic research.
Not even vegetarianism, or...?
Oh, she was... Oh, no, she did take up vegetarianism, because I remember being very much amused. I was lunching with her at the Lyceum Club in London. And she put down her knife and fork. She said, you know, I'm going psychic on this food. And I thought there was a huge joke. I was much amused at it. But she had taken up vegetarianism, tried it out. And when she took up a thing, she really tried it out. So she took me along to, I think it was the Houston's Miles restaurant there, which was a thing in London then. And of course, there were people like Bernard Shaw who were, you know, involved.
What's the name of it?
Houston's Miles. The name is still...
S-M-I-L-E-S?
Yes, I think so. Houston. Houston's.
Houston's.
Or Eustace, probably. Oh, yes, there's certain packeted foods, I think, would still bear that name.
And he was a person who owned a vegetarian restaurant.
He must have done. He was a very leading light in it at that time, but I wasn't a vegetarian then. I wasn't especially interested, and I was rather amused at May Walker doing this. I don't think she adopted vegetarianism completely, kept to it. I don't think she did, but she explored it, you see.
Yeah, she explored a lot of things.
She explored a lot of things.
Yeah.
And always managed to meet up with the interesting people involved. She had, I think, a flair for that, you see.
She sort of collected people, you
think, collected people. Oh, she certainly collected people, yes. My husband says I've got the same flair, but he says, can you pick them? Because he thinks I pick all the queer cranks that exist.
What about peace movement and things like that? Was she active in that at all, do you think?
I don't think so. I don't think she was a pacifist. Mm. Not a professed pacifist.
No.
She might have been interested. She might have been interested in things like the League of Nations,
yes.
That sort of thing.
Yes.
Rather on the fringe of pacifism.
Yes.
You see. Yes. No, she never devoted herself completely or gave herself over completely to any particular cause. See, she didn't even with the suffragettes, because she didn't go out and volunteer to chain herself to the lamppost or anything. I don't think. She came very near to it. She was tremendously in sympathy with the women who did. But as far as I can remember, I don't think she ever actually was in serious danger of being arrested.
Did she ever talk about her part in the movement to you? I mean, was it a
Well,
thing
she
in
talked
her life,
about the women that were in it, whom she'd collected, I suppose. And about them and what they stood for and everything else and how extremely right it was.
Mrs. Pankhurst, presumably, was it?
Oh, yes, Mrs. Pankhurst, Sylvia Pankhurst. I heard all about them from May. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, she knew everything about them.
Yes.
And I suppose knew them personally.
Yeah.
Whether she ever went to meet them coming out of prison, I can't quite remember. She quite likely did.
Anyway, it was important in her life.
Oh,
I mean,
very important. Oh, yes, it was very important, because it was perhaps the thing that she committed herself to more than anything else.
Was that how you got contact with the Suffragette Fellowship? I mean, was she, in fact, in the Suffragette Fellowship?
Well, I don't know if it was formed then. I don't think it was. Mm. No, I simply got in contact with it because I thought it was rather nice a memory of her.
I see, yes.
You see, just to support it.
Yes. What about, I mean, she liked talking, did she? She was a talker.
Yes. Oh, yes, she liked talking. She enjoyed that.
Walking? Exercise generally?
No, I don't think she ever indulged. I never remember indulging in games or sports very much. I don't think she did.
So it's reading, travelling?
Reading and travelling and art and all those sort of things she was interested
in.
Is it art? Oh, yes, because the Walkers were. Her father's brother was Sir Andrew Walker, who gave the Walker Art Gallery to Liverpool when he was mayor of Liverpool. And so the Walkers evidently had an interest in art that way. And his son, Colonel Hall Walker, who became Lord Wavertree, he was a great friend of May's. And she used to go and meet him and lunch with him and that sort of thing. And they were both interested in the family and the family traditions. She used to go and lunch with the Prime Minister, I suppose, of Canada. Can't remember which one he was, the name, but I know she went and lunched with him. I think it could have been. And I think she made him change the bread on the table from white to brown on one occasion, when she felt she wanted brown bread.
She sounds quite a character. Was she,
well, she
forceful,
was character.
Would you say? I mean, was it just a feminine way of getting her?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't quite a feminine way.
Mm. She was quite sort of dominant.
She could have done it because her looks were a great advantage to her. I don't think she ever did it in that way.
Mm.
No, I think she generally knew, was better informed than the people she was talking to. So she earned their respect in that way, I think. And she was a great bridge player.
Was she really?
Oh, and sat up all night playing bridge, yes. Yes.
She's obviously, in a sense, wasted, isn't she?
Very much wasted, yes. Oh, very much wasted, yes. Yes. Could have been quite capable. She had a sense of humour, I think, definitely.
What about the Second War, then? What did she do in that? She
well,
here.
By the time of the Second War, I don't think she was in England. Whether she had already gone to Canada, I think she possibly had.
Yeah.
Or went soon after it began.
I see, yes.
You'll see. Because I know she sent me food parcels from there.
Did she? Oh, well.
So she was definitely there some part of the Second War.
Mm.
So she didn't take any part, you see, from this side at all. She would follow it, of course, with great interest, and probably had theories about it.
What did her friends say about her when they wrote when she died from Canada? I mean, what sort of things did they admire in her? Do you remember?
I don't know if I've got the letters. They wrote to her sister, and evidently had been very devoted and attended her funeral and considered it very much a duty, and did everything possible they could as well to show her respect. They seemed to respect her very much. She was about 70 when she died, and she had just bought what you called a rosewood house. I'm afraid it mustn't mean sequoia, which one very much regrets they were using, you know, to build houses. I think eventually it was made illegal. I think that they were not to fell the big redwoods. But apparently this was a rosewood house, and she said to me when she was here, when she was 68, she said, I've just bought this house, and I must go and get it ready, I suppose, for my old age. And there she'd meant to settle, see, permanently, and then she got cancer and died soon after.
When did she die, actually, Mrs. Goodman?
Well, she was 70. And she was exactly, I think, 20 years older than I am. So I was born in 1902, so if you add 20 to that...
Yes, I see. So it's 1882, isn't it?
Yes, about that time she was born. Yes,
yes, I see.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, she was.
You say she had a sense of humour. Would she tell jokes then, or what? And how would you...
No, I don't think she told jokes. I think she... no. But she had a sense of humour.
She had a sort of joie de vivre, did she, or a sort of liveliness about her, which...
Yes. She was very fond of the theatre. I remember she said she was going up to London, this was when I was quite young, to see, was it Beerbohm Tree, or who was, could it have been?
Could well be.
And that he died just before she was able to see him. And she suddenly followed the theatre, the more serious theatre. With definite interest. I don't know that she cared specially for music.
When you say she was interested in art, you mean she just looked at pictures, did she, or did she actually paint?
Oh, she herself? Never actually painted, that I know. No, I don't think she did. At all. I don't think she tried to do anything of that sort, but she was interested. And she would look at everything with intelligence. And she would know what were the latest things and what to look for and that sort of thing. I suppose it was a kind of social sense, you see. She was accustomed to mixing with her, yes, to mixing with her own class very much, and could do it on any subject.
And her class, I suppose, is upper middle.
Upper middle, oh yes, upper middle it was, very much so, yes. Oh yes, I don't think she ever had any particular contact with any other class, I don't think so.
And when you say she read a lot, what sort of things?
Oh, what seemed to me very heavy stuff when I was young, things on either psychology of that period, or psychic research, or...
Religion in some way, would
it? Well, not religion at that time very much.
Philosophy?
I don't think so. No, I don't think so. But science, in a way, latest discoveries and so forth, all interested her.
Was she good with young people, do you think? I mean,
well, I never really saw her with children.
I mean, you were much younger than she was,
yes.
And you got on with her all right, obviously.
Well,
I mean,
yes, I got on with her all right. Oh, yes, yes, I got on with her quite well.
Difficult to know whether that's because you were young, though, isn't it, or because you were a member of the family? Or
yes, I was
what?
A member of the family, you see. And I think she enjoyed the contact with someone younger than herself. Mm. But I never heard her speak very much about children. I don't think she had the opportunity to be in very close contact with children very often. Don't think so.
What about dress and makeup and things like that? Did she take trouble over that?
Didn't do much in the way of makeup because it hadn't become the thing, I don't think. But her dress was rather flamboyant. She was very fond of colour. She had lovely jewellery. And she was very fond of jewellery. And also she thought it was an investment. And when she was staying with a Welsh connection of mine, who was a millionaire and out in Bogota, she went to stay with him, and she said that she thought that it was very wise to go in for jewellery as an investment. And at the dinner table, I think, she pulled out her skirt and showed that she'd got a garter with some priceless diamonds or something on it. And he was absolutely horrified because the servants were in the room, you see. May Walker never thought of that at all. But she was carrying these things on her person. But she had a liking for jewellery, and whether it's a sort of excuse because she liked having it, I don't know, but she did buy things. Whether she resold them again, I don't really know, but she left me a very interesting piece, which was an Inca gold necklace, a genuinely old one, you see. It was sent to me after her death. And she had pearls, too. Well, she liked that, and she liked to wear Chinese embroidery or something rather very gay. She was extremely beautiful. I remember her stepping into a carriage, because it was all carriages in those days, wearing a sort of pearl-grey dress with beautiful pink corals and pink rosebud earrings. And I think a big hat. And I remember only as a child thinking how very beautiful she was. And she could dress, but because she travelled about a lot, her dress was a little bit, I don't know quite how to describe it. It was very attractive, but it wasn't always exactly soigné. You know, she'd got things out of a trunk and sometimes mixed them up together or that, and she had a curious thing which annoyed my grandmother very much, that she wasn't careful about her shoes. She would wear comfortable old shoes with a beautiful dress, you see, and she wore them down on one side or other, I forget, you see, and her mamma would say, "May I wish you would get those shoes repaired or get a new pair." So there was a certain curious lack in that, you see. Well, she had never been taught particularly to be soigné. Everything that she'd done, she taught herself to do. And she hadn't been disciplined in that. She had this choice, and her furniture was beautiful.
Was it in her house?
In her house, this lovely red lacquer, which must have been quite valuable, which she'd collected, and was very charming in the flat. But and it all went together, it was all Chinese and that sort of thing. But in her dress, I think it was because, you see, she hadn't got wardrobes where she could keep things properly. She lived in trunks. So that she was considered by the family to be a little bit extraordinary in her dress. But certainly you noticed it, and it was never dowdy. It was never dull at all. Oh, no.
She's not eccentric exactly, is she?
She wasn't eccentric. She was individual. She wasn't an eccentric. No. Because, you see, she didn't fasten on something. I'm much more an eccentric than her, because if I go for a thing, I stick to it.
Mm.
And she wasn't a butterfly exactly, because she wasn't content until she had extracted a good deal of knowledge about the subject. When she'd done that, something else might attract her attention. She'd go for that with equal vigor, you see, and then she wouldn't have time for the thing that she'd had before.
Yes, I see. What happened to her mother? Her mother died...
Her mother died, long after she was in Canada.
Oh, did she?
Oh, yes.
So
yes.
Presumably she was looked after by the other daughters?
No, the other daughter was married. She had a sister who lived with her, a Scottish sister who lived with her, and she lived to be about 84, and died,
not long before her daughter then, probably.
Well, not 10 years, I would think, perhaps,
yes.
Between their deaths, probably, you see.
Yes. Anything else about May Walker that you'd like to bring out, that you'd like to remember her by? I mean, one asks sort of rather amateur questions, and I'd never met her.
I don't think so. Nobody else, you see, has ever come to me expressing a particular interest in her. The person who was interested was this cousin, who rather perhaps envied her freedom, and who never found her own expansion until she took on the canteen for the soldiers.
Yes.
It sounds a small thing to do.
Yes, but it could be very important.
It was, I think, quite important in the in the life that went on in Glen Didno at that time, because in two world wars Glen Didno was a hub of military life. So it had to be.
Could we move on to talking about your own guiding?
The girl guiding, yes.
I mean, when did you join, actually, Mrs. Goodman?
I joined when I was still in Glen Didno. And I was there till I was 22.
So and that would be 1924?
About, yes, 23, about, you see. And it was started in Glen Didno, and...
It was starting then, was it? I mean, it had already started.
It actually began. It began in Glen Didno about 23, and the meeting was called, and the county commissioner came along, and two friends of mine who were also business people, they were from Waringillows, they were Warings, and they knew about guiding, and they said, oh, well, now we take this up, and you must take it up too, Peggy. So we all three did, and so I was in it. Until I went to live in Gloucestershire, you see.
Well, why do you think? Why did they say we always take it up? And why would one take it up at that time? Because it was good for young girls to get out of the open air.
Well, I think again, you see, in our generation, we were young and unmarried. We were quite young. I was actually only 19 when I first became a guider. I think so. And so it was an interesting thing. We thought it was an interesting thing to do, because these two sisters had been involved in it. Their cousin Gladys Waring was a commissioner, and they used to go and help with her guide work. And they invited me. I went down to a camp in Eastbourne, and so we knew about it. And thought, well, this is a splendid thing, now it's come to Glen Didno, and we'll go into it. So we took it up, and of course we'd accepted, because we were three young women who just the type they like to get hold of.
So what happened to do then? It. What did you do then? You three have decided to get it started in Glen Didno. What did you do?
Well, I was appointed as the town company captain, you see. The other two said, oh, you better be captain, so I said, all right. And so then I proceeded to train myself, which I went off to a number of training places. That's where I met the women who had come fresh out of the First World War, and who were wanting to carry on something of what they'd been doing, you see, in the war, and took up guiding with great effect. And I think that guiding flourished very much at that time. And we had the first international guide camp, which was very well run. It was at Foxley's. And all the leading guide us were there.
When was that?
That was 24.
Yes, I see.
1924.
And where is Foxleys?
Foxleys is the sort of headquarters, camping headquarters, outside of London, of the Girl Guide movement.
I see.
It's the main training place, and still is. And so that it was a kind of mecca, you see, as there's one for scouting to Gilwell, which
yes,
I also equally
I
do.
See, yes.
But I took a good deal of training and then was
in
asked...
What, actually? I mean,
well, in running guides.
Yes.
And then in camping, because I got appointed as county camp advisor for Carnarvonshire, which meant I had to inspect camps and things which came in. To the county, and I went on doing that until I went to Gloucestershire and found I couldn't keep it on anymore, and I and my friend were just about to start to go around the world, so I said, I'm very sorry, I've got to give up now.
Then you became scoutmaster.
I participated in the guides with my friend, but then she was the captain. And I was really quite redundant because there wasn't any need for me. So I said to my adopted uncle down there, her uncle, I said, what about me running scouts in the village instead? And he said, oh, righto. So I ran scouts.
But if you put yourself back to starting off guiding in
yes.
Llandudno now,
yes.
What did you do from week to week and how did you spend
What did
time?
You do? Oh, well, I went into it up to the hilt because I had a town company. And I had actually three lieutenants for that, which was rather ridiculous. It was perhaps rather more than most people have. And so then I looked around and there was a small village, Penrhynside, and so I said, we'd better start a company there. So we started a company there, of which I was captain. And one of the Waring girls then took on the brownies there, you see, and she was the brown owl, as it's called, for the younger children, and I ran the village as well. Well, then I met Dame Catherine Furs, you see, I was connected with the sea guides, and I started a small group of sea guides also in Llandudno. So that kept me extremely occupied.
Well, you were in a job as well.
No, I was in no job. Because, you see, I was in May Walker's position a generation afterwards, you see.
Yes, I see.
That I was at home. There was, it wasn't expected that I would ever do anything except get married, you see. So, rather like her, I didn't. And so I did that until I actually left Llandudno.
I see. So you had every day to really organize.
I had
all
my time to myself. I could do what I liked. I was 21. I could go off to training camps, which I did, so that I got quite a good training in what the guides do.
It must have been very good for you to get you out of the family circle as well.
Yes, it was. I mean, it was...
You out.
Oh, certainly. It undoubtedly was. Meeting with so many people doing the same thing and so forth, and certain competition in it, you see. You had to try to come up to standard.
But these women who you say came out of the First World War with military experience,
yes.
How did you notice them? I mean, they were just, you just talked to them, or they became clear, did it in discussion that they'd been in the war?
Oh, yes, they would say so. They'd talk about when they were in the fannies or whatever it was. Or it was a naval thing, because Dame Catherine Furs, I think, ran something of a naval nature.
It was following this up, wouldn't it? Very interesting. I hadn't thought of that.
Yes. Before. Dame Catherine Furs, a remarkable woman. There's a wonderful painting of, I can't remember who it's by, Diana of the Crossways.
Oh, yes.
Again, an enormous picture hat and a long flowing cloak or coat and two Russian dogs, I think, or something. It's a wonderful painting. It's by somebody well known. And she was a very remarkable woman. Very.
But if you're running your, I don't know what the equivalent of a scout troop
well,
is.
You call it a company.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you're running your company now in the early 20s or the mid-20s.
Yes.
In Llandudno. What do you do with them?
Well, at that time, you did quite a lot of drill. And I remember going to a training day in London in some military drill hall where the leaders were working terribly hard to teach us what was simply military drill. And we learnt it, and we learnt to have it by heart, and then we put these children onto it, you see, so that you gave them some drill. It was a discipline, and you had to do your signalling, Morse or semaphore signalling. And there was there's a regular programme by which they work themselves up. They're first called a 10th foot, and then they're called a second class and first class, you see. So you had your programme, but you had to use your own imagination on how you presented it and find out what appealed to the children, how long they could stand one thing, we had to switch on to something else before they got rested, and invent games. And so I thoroughly enjoyed using my imagination, inventing different kinds of games that they could play, because the thing was to teach by play. It was far in advance of its time. Many things have copied it, which seemed long beyond it in different directions.
What sort of things would you teach by playing then, would you say?
Well, observation and quickness, speed, cooperation.
Alertness generally.
Yes. Mm. Oh, yes.
But what they was there in it for them? I mean, they're young girls in that kind of now. What is there in it? I mean, young children now wouldn't drill, would they?
I don't suppose they do it now. I think it's totally different now. In fact, they've had such an effort, both in scouting and guiding, to go modern, that they even revised the whole basis of the thing, which was the scout and afterwards the guide law, which Baden-Powell devised. And they even changed that. And I've written many times to guide headquarters, also the scout headquarters, lodging my protest, and I have met with people who very much agree with me that this was a great mistake. He was a very great a leader in his time, and he had the wisdom to select the basic law by which you were supposed to live and on which you made the promise that you took when you were made a guide, you enrolled, as they called it, that he was quite capable of making one that could endure, probably, for all time. There was no need to go and modernize it. And, in fact, to water it down, because certain points were actually left out of the 10 guide laws and the 10 scout laws. They left out the one which is a guide or a scout is a friend to animals. That simply does not exist anymore in scouting. And many of us were not at all in agreement with that. But of course we had no power to say so. That was done at headquarters.
But did it, I suppose in a sense, in Clandon at that time, there was less for children to do, is that right? I mean,
I don't
it
know.
Gave them a lot of interest.
Yes, they were not pampered in any way. They were not, I don't suppose there were the playing fields and the facilities at all that there are today. But no, it was, Baden-Powell had a very strong sense of the idealism of youth and what would appeal to them. And the fact that they liked a challenge, and they liked a uniform, and they liked to be a gang.
All the things now which children allegedly don't like.
They don't like
drill, they don't like uniforms, they don't like formal organisation at all. I mean, I think probably he was right. I mean, they do like these things.
Change of fashion. It very much appealed to them, the idealism of being a guide and of having a law to live by and a standard and of making yourself capable of doing first aid in accidents or with a fire or things like that enormously appealed.
How did you get your members, actually, Mrs. Goodman, and what did you
do? They just came.
I mean, you had a meeting hall, did you?
We met in a school.
Yes.
I had to meet in one of the schools.
Yes.
Afterwards, in scouting, I had my own headquarters, and that was very much better. But they just came. They told one another. And that continued, and it was the same in scouting, the small village group in Gloucestershire. And so much was it put into me, because I went through the scout training at Gilwell and got what they call the Gilwell badge, the wood badge, which qualified one, you see, to be a qualified scouter. And that was so much put into oneself that when here, only about, I suppose, 10 years ago or so, there was desire in, among some children, I suppose I'd given magazines to form the Young Crusaders. This was the junior group of the Crusade Against All Cruelty to Animals. And the boys in the village here said they would like to be crusaders. So I said, all right, you come up to Tallinnang Harad and we'll start one. And then I said, I think we're the only Welsh-speaking group, in fact, probably the only group in Wales, and I found out from headquarters that was the case, you see. And so then I proceeded to give them what was really scouting, and rather, I think, staggered the people who run it, because they hadn't developed any of those ideas at all. I mean, you just did a magazine and you paid a subscription and called yourself a crusader, you see, but I put a whole lot into it, which they liked. They liked it just as much as my scouts and my guides had done, okay? And they more or less had the freedom to come up here when they liked, and so forth, and I never went to canvas for them. They said, we think we've got another crusader for you, and I said, well, if you think he's going to be a good one, you bring him along, you must decide that. So they did.
And the same really happened with the guides in the 20s. It was part of
the same happened.
With friendship.
Yes,
and,
there was no. I didn't try much to get them.
Yes.
In fact, you could get as many as you could cope with,
yes.
Really.
Yes. They had to pay a bit, didn't they? But not
oh,
very
yes,
much.
They didn't pay very much.
No.
They didn't pay very much. They had to get a uniform.
Yes.
Because the great thing was to go to camp, and you had a uniform, and you went to camp.
Mm.
Because in camp, you got them for at least a week, and therefore you can have some far greater influence over their character than you have at just a two-hour weekly
You
meeting.
Met once a week, did you? I mean,
Yes, the regular thing was once a week, you see. And more often, because you could go out on Saturdays. And so that one did a great deal. I did much more with the scouting, because again, although I was much busier in Gloucestershire, I still was my own mistress, that I could devote my Saturdays, and used to take the boys out in the woods, and somebody said, how can you be satisfied with nothing but a couple of small boys all that time? So, well, I'm perfectly happy, and so are they. And they all went into the war, of course, those boys, you see. They were just about the age to go in. And I would meet them in uniform. And one said to me, well, now we understand what you were teaching us. It wasn't until we got on the Normandy beaches that we realized what we were learning. Then it came to them.
In a sense, there is a close tie-up, isn't there? Which, you know, what about religious groups and so on? Did you actually work quite well as a guide?
As guides.
Company,
well,
captain,
I had a free town group, and I was very anxious to have that. I didn't very much approve of them being tied to a church group. I thought there was going to be too much dictatorship from somebody else, you see, who wasn't actually involved in it, or even a school group which kept itself to its own members. And I very much wanted to have, and did have, the town group, which meant anybody who wanted to come along. And I had the rabbi's daughter and Catholics and whatever denominations else there were. But you didn't teach religion as such.
It's also ethics, really, isn't it?
Ethics,
I mean,
well,
good to your neighbour, that sort of thing.
Well, you see, the promise is, or was then, I promised to do my best, to do my duty to God and the King, to obey the Scout law, and help other people at all times. Well, God comes into it, you see, God and the King. But a Japanese or a Hindu, and he would say the same thing, was the point. You didn't argue about the kind of conception of God that the children had.
No.
Only that it did have that. It did have a higher power. Mm-hmm. Yes.
But how does this all fit in with the women's movement, if at all? Because surely well, the women's movement, one would have thought, would rather favour, I suppose, in a way, a movement which did for girls precisely what was being done for boys, that is, training them for military sort of activity or outdoor activity and so on.
Yes.
Is that how it fits, do you think?
Or what, the suffragette?
The guiding. Guiding. How does one describe it in relation to the women's movement overall? I suppose it doesn't have any relation, really.
Well, you see, it began because when Baden-Powell first had jamborees for the boys, he never thought of the girls at all. It never occurred to him, apparently.
Mm.
He was so set in his military way, he had to shake off a lot of that, I think.
Yes.
And it never occurred to him, but at some big rally, girls appeared in uniform, do you see.
Yes.
And he was quite staggered by this and said, what are you doing? They said, oh, we're Girl Scouts, you see.
Mm.
And early women's
movement. Girls thing.
Absolutely a girl's thing, yes.
But what about class now? This is awfully difficult. What sort of girls would you attract in Llandudno in the 20s? Would they be the very bottom of the working class?
You mean as the guides themselves, not the guiders?
The guides, yes.
The guides. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, all classes.
All classes.
They would be shop assistants, domestic servants, if they were free to do it. Shop assistants. Very largely in a place like Llandudno. Small shopkeepers' daughters. Almost all of them.
Working class, lower middle class.
Oh yes. There were very few of another class that could join as guides. There were not many children. You see, Llandudno is a place where old people retired who didn't have children or they'd grown up. Our class, the workers' class, you see, and so that the townspeople were more or less all one, and there were very few that would have joined as children as guys. I don't think there were any, not because they didn't want to join. I don't think they existed. Obviously, the commissioners were looking out for girls of my class, you see, to run it.
Yes, the guiders then were a higher class.
Oh, yes, they were.
The people who were.
They were. Some of them were, but some of them, you see, were school teachers.
Mm.
So they had a different outlook. So the people who'd had my upbringing.
Yes, yes. But why couldn't a working woman be a guider?
She certainly could be.
Mm.
But, and probably now much more is. But again, I think, you see, coming out of the Second World War, there was that conception of the officer class, wasn't there?
Yes.
I think that had a certain influence in the selection.
Mm.
Also, they had much more time.
Yes,
the others haven't got
have.
The time to give.
Yes,
because, you see, you give your time voluntary, nobody pays you anything.
Yes, of course.
And you can't do it. It wouldn't have been possible, Lucy.
Yes,
No. So that made it unavoidable, really, that you got that type.
It's very interesting.
You got that type. Oh, you got Lady So-and-so in that very often.
Yes.
In it, you see.
But only at the sort of officer level.
Yes, I'm speaking of the officer level. When you went to training camps, you would meet some of the important people. I remember, on that account, going to one in Gloucestershire. This was before I lived in Gloucestershire, and the commissioner said, wouldn't we like to go to Stratford-on-Avon to a Shakespeare play? This was when the Shakespeare Theatre didn't exist, and I think there'd been a fire. And this play was taken in some very curious kind of building, and we had very hard seats to sit on and all that, I remember. And we went to this play, and we went in sort of lorries. And we drove through that countryside in the blossom time with a brilliant moon. It was a marvelous sight. The you know, Evesham and all that part is one mass of blossom. And we went to this. It was a great occasion. We all thoroughly enjoyed the whole thing, particularly this. And we had with us a girl who arrived as I did. I travelled from Wales, and I suppose my train got in early, and I turned up at the commissioner's house, and she said, oh yes, there's only one come yet. She's in the greenhouse, learning her tenderfoot, because we're both quite new. So you come in and you can work together, you see. So I thought that was fine. And there was this girl sitting, learning. And I was introduced, and she was Lady May Cambridge, or Lady Mary Cambridge. I think she was Lady Mary Cambridge, there were two. Well, she's now the Duchess Beaufort. And she and I sat and heard each other say things, you see, or do morse and things. And she fitted in quite all right as a guide.
You actually had to go through yourselves as guide.
Oh, yes.
All the
Oh, yes, we had to do it.
Of course, it would be easy if you were educated women.
Yes, you had to do it. And then you could take the badges if you wanted to, and you could get up to a standard of that you had cords. I've got those cords. We worked on that. Oh, yes, you had a certain amount of training to do, and I did a great deal of reading on it.
So there's an element of democracy in it, meaning that everybody has to go through the same course, in a sense.
Oh, yes.
But it's just that some people get through quicker than others because they're clever, or they come from a different class, they've got better education and so on.
Yes, but you see, it's designed for children, so after all, it's not very difficult at all. No, it's not very difficult.